Watch a patch. Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
Welcome to the princes that were promised. It's me, it's Shawnee Wan, and joining me via Skype, it's John, and we're going deep on the dragon and the wolf, the season finale for the penultimate season of HBO's Game of Thrones, the adaptation of George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire. And I tell you, man, I got a text today from Carolyn. She took Frank out for a playdate. And she texts me, how many books are there? And I'm like, five. How many times do I have to tell you this? And then she's like, when does the next one come out? I'm like, nobody knows. Probably never. How many times do I have to tell you this? And she's like, oh, because I'm with Frank's friend's mom. And she says that he just finished the book. I'm like, no, he didn't. She's like, that's what she just said. I'm like, no fucking way. But I still like went.
It's her friend's mom, also Paris Martin.
Yeah.
Whatever George Martin's wife's name is.
Because if not, there's no way. And sure enough, I went to LiveJournal and he had a post about wild cards. Nothing about A Song of Ice and Fire. I did get excited for a second. The girl sounded like she really knew what she was talking about. I thought maybe, you know, I had to look at the computer all day. Maybe I missed something, but.
What do they call that? Like a ghost launch?
Oh, like a. Yeah, like a. It's like no marketing, just a release.
It's just there. We decided the book would sell itself.
I mean, the show is marketing enough for the book, so.
It's out. Now, or can leave me alone for 5 years while I start writing the next book.
While I get ready to maybe consider start writing the next book. Speaking of George R. R. Martin, I think topic number one for today is, well, it's a couple things. It's George R. R. Martin, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, and the unexpectedly large amount of complaints that I've been seeing about Game of Thrones. And not so much the entirety of season 7, but really the last 3-4 episodes. Well, the last 3. Everybody loves spoils of war.
Except us.
Except for us. And then nobody liked the next 3, except for us. So I don't get it. Even our group message, everybody was like, spoils of war, greatest episode ever? Greatest episode ever? It's like, no, definitely not the greatest episode ever. In fact, there were 2 episodes after Spoils of War that were better, for sure, and you guys hate it. So what gives? But a lot of complaints about the writing. It seems to be the complainers about the writing are non-book readers, for the most part.
To me, it's the way around. It's book readers.
Oh, well, I mean, that I can understand, I guess, because they're going to complain about the show. A lot of them are going to complain about the show no matter what. And a lot of that is bitterness at Martin and at not being in the know any longer. They're on the same page as everybody else in the world. I went through that last year, if you remember. Being upset that at one point in time I knew everything that was going to happen on the show and I could judge it on its execution, and then season 6 rolls around and I'm like everybody else. John, what do you think? Do you think the writing suffered in season 7?
It wasn't great. I'm seeing so many complaints, and you know what? Blame the guy who can't finish a book. Okay? He himself has come out and said he's missed 2 deadlines.
Yes.
This is not like the fandom has put this fandom-induced deadline that we all expect him to be done. He himself has come out and said that he's missed 2 deadlines that his higher-ups have put forth before him. And that was, 2 years plus now he's missed the deadline. He's not gotten a book out in 2 years, since the 2 years since he had the deadline passed. It's closing in on 2 years, Sean, where he made that January 1st or January 2nd update on where he was and how, you know,
how upset he was about it.
He failed the first deadline. The publishing you would say that they would speed track it if he could get it out and give him more time. And he failed that deadline. He has failed 2 deadlines. You know what, guys? Blame him. You can blame D&D, and we can go on here and ask what they did wrong this season. but blame the author. This guy, I swear to God, I've never seen a guy that gets so much free slack from anyone. This guy can do no wrong. You know what? He can do wrong. He's done a lot wrong, all right? Any reputable company would force this guy to stop what he's freaking doing because there's too much money on the goddamn table. And what are you doing with the damn book?
Well, those are the people that I blame. And you're right. Blame George R. R. Martin. You can blame his work habits. You can blame how often he gets sidetracked. You can blame all of the different projects he gets his meaty little fucking fingers in. But ultimately, he must be surrounded by a bunch of yes-men. And you have to blame his publishers, who are going to end up losing the most money. This guy is already, he's got no kids that I know of, right? George Martin doesn't have any kids.
Nope.
So he's got money to live out the next however many years of life he has. And then what? Like, he's got more money than he could possibly know what to do with. So the only reason he has to finish this series at all is legacy. And I think that's reason enough. And that's what his publishers should be selling to him, because they stand to lose money the later this book gets published. And we talked about last season how the show ending would affect the book's sales. They did half a reveal last year about John's parentage, and the second half now about John being legitimate. That's his greatest reveal, and it was taken away from him. But he still can sell a shitload of books if the thing gets out before season 8. I'm not confident that it will. At the same time, I think HBO will continue to delay season 8 as long as they possibly can, at least until they have an heir apparent to Game of Thrones. Dude, 12.1 million people watched The Dragon and the Wolf. 12.1 million people. Every week, this series has had its highest ratings ever and the highest viewership for a premium cable show in history. Every week over the last 7 weeks. So they don't want the show to go away. And George R. R. Martin's publisher, Bantam Books here in America, they don't want this show to end without at least The Winds of Winter being released. And we know A Dream of Spring isn't going to be released before the show. We know that. That was a foregone conclusion back in season 4. Season 5 for sure. But at least if they can get one book out, they can all get paid. And it seems he just got back from another trip to New York. And what do you think they were saying to him when he went to meet with them? Do you think they were saying,
you know, the more I'm thinking about it, the more he has to put out an update on them, the more they probably freaking blasted him.
I don't know. I don't think that they do. I don't think they blast him. I think if they blasted him, I think he would have finished these fucking books.
He hasn't said anything about it.
Oh.
I feel like a guy like George R. R. Martin would just crawl up in a shell if someone actually yelled at him.
Right. Oh, dude, exactly. Just like a turtle.
You know, they yelled at me!
His head would disappear into his fucking neck. Or his lack of neck. Brr. Where'd his head go? I don't know. Does that mean he finished the book? I don't know.
I'm trying to write the book as fast as I can.
Leave me alone. I'm very, very busy. You're being very mean to me. I'm going back to New Mexico. Yeah, I agree with you for the most part. Blame Martin. But I also disagree with you because I feel like Benioff and Weiss's best stuff were when they moved away from what Martin wrote. Yet at the same time, it was still following Martin's outline. So for some of season 6 and all of season 7, they were in, like, not a free fall, but they were mapping out how this saga would go based on a few plot points given to them from Martin. At least with season 6, some of those storylines were taken from The Winds of Winter, sample chapters from A Dance of Dragons, from A Feast for Crows, some of them. And it's their best season in terms of them doing their own thing and moving away from the narrative of A Song of Ice and Fire. But the difference between season 6 and season 7 is like night and day. And I do partly blame that on Benioff and Weiss because we've talked about this a few times. It seems like they've moved on from this show and are looking forward to their next project. They want to wrap it up. It's been so many years of their life and they want it to be over and done with. And I think that they should have somehow tried to find their second wind. At the same time, all these complaints about the writing, I don't think they're totally justified. I thought The Wolf and the Dragon, I don't know why I keep calling it the Wolf and the Dragon. The Dragon and the Wolf, I thought that was some of the best writing of the season from the get-go. There wasn't one scene that didn't have good dialogue in it and didn't push the narrative forward. I'll agree that Eastwatch and a little bit of Beyond the Wall, it just was kind of plot lines in flight pattern. But not this, not the series finale, not the season finale. No way. What did you think of the Dragon and the Wolf's writing in particular?
I thought it was very good. I thought they got back to kind of like those one-on-one, you know, confrontations, not physical confrontations, but, you know, verbal confrontations.
Yeah.
The reunions obviously were pretty cool.
Beyond the Wall and the Dragon and the Wolf should have been rewards to everyone for sticking through this series so far. And I have more of a problem with Beyond the Wall than I do with the Dragon and the Wolf. I think the Dragon and the Wolf was the best of the season. I think it's one of the best of the series. And it's hard for me to find much problem with it, except for the problems that went into it, meaning the Winterfell storyline and how that kind of stumbled into this episode to finally be resolved. Theon finally getting some screen time in this episode when he probably should have all season long. Those are my problems with this episode, and it's not really this episode in particular. It's just plot lines from all season long finally coming to fruition or coming to an end in this episode. It was like a tidy wrap-up episode, but a very well-executed tidy wrap-up episode. If you don't have anything else to say about George Martin or Benioff and Weiss, maybe we'll touch on topic two, which is the Winterfell Littlefinger trap. And we talked about it on our initial review. I know we both enjoyed it, but is there a way we could have enjoyed it more? What do you think went wrong with this execution?
I just came across some vital information before. There was the interview with Isaac Hempstead Wright, who plays Bran Stark. And he had said...
Oh, Dr. Bran Hatton.
Maybe this can clarify some of all of our questions and all of our thinking as to why they tried to make it look like, because if Bran says what is right here, Isaac Hempstead Wright says what is right here, then we all, I think, questioned, you know, were the Stark girls, were they playing Littlefinger, or was this part of a scheme? Mm-hmm. According to Isaac Hempstead Wright, IHR.
Okay. No, I think it's IHW, I think.
IHW.
He's like a modern-day JTT.
He said that up until this week's episode, the girls were truly against each other. And that there was a... Which, when I first read that part, I'm like, then why or what or how did they come to the conclusion to do that to Littlefinger? But supposedly there's a deleted scene that didn't make the cut, where I guess would have happened last week or 2 weeks ago, or anywhere, wherever you had, what have you. And it's Sansa visiting Bran in his hall room there, his bedroom, and basically saying, giving out the truth. Then Sansa saying, oh, crap.
Wait, this is a deleted scene?
Deleted scene, yes.
From Eastwatch or Beyond the Wall?
Don't know which episode.
Well, it'd have to be one of the two. I would think Beyond the Wall. Yeah, it would have to be. Because, I mean, I'm not sure why each episode had the runtime that it had, but it would have made the most sense. Arya and Sansa only reunited in Spoils of War. At least give it a couple episodes where they are kind of in a little mini feud. But, you know, asking the audience to take a side of one or the other, I mean, it's asking for trouble also. Honestly, what it reminds me of, the whole thing, and I like the execution of both of these TV events. One is this one, which is the trapping of Littlefinger at Winterfell, and whether or not Sansa and Arya are at odds with each other. And you don't know, you think so, you think maybe not, maybe they're tricking Littlefinger, you're not sure until it actually happens. It reminds me a lot of the Walking Dead fiasco from a couple years ago, when someone was killed with a barbed wire baseball bat, and you weren't sure who it was because the camera took their point of view at the very end of the episode. And then you had to wait a whole season to find out who got killed. It feels a little bit like trickery on the showrunner's part and deception on the showrunner's part, but not in a good way. It's almost like teasing and fucking with the audience and force feeding your audience. It's almost like amateurish to do a storyline that way, where you don't know, it could go either way. There's clues to both ways, and the showmakers are showing you what they want you to see to make you doubt yourself and make you not know. You know, there's ways to do that that are artistic and offer clues. And then there's ways to just fuck with the audience and screw with their heads and then make a big reveal. And they think the audience is going to go, oh, wow, we should have known. But it was really quite irritating leading up to this final episode. You know, to actually believe that the Starks would, at this point in the series, the Starks would go against one another. It's kind of silly, but somehow they got that idea into our head, and that wasn't entertaining.
The dances of wolves.
That being said, the trial scene was good, and I think it worked mostly because of Aidan Gillian's acting. Or Aidan Gillian's.
I have to admit that I love the timing of Sansa there. How do you plead to this?
Lord Baelish.
You know what's so funny about that scene? Is Bran again.
Yeah.
Just watch Bran. The way he looks over to Baelish is just so, like, monotonic. It's so funny. He just has this, like, slowish, non-emotional, like, turn to the right. It's so funny.
Oh, Bran Stark. He was all right in season 6. What? I don't know what the fuck happened, man. Yeah, it's like he went off the rails again.
And I am the three-eyed raven. You did say not to trust me. I love that. I love that counter by Baelish. And he's like, none of you were there. None of you were there. None of you knows what happened.
Well, that's all he had going for him was nobody was there.
But there was Bran Stark. Did you see the meme?
Oh, no.
It's like next season, like when Bran and John meet, Bran's gonna go, John, I saw you that night. You look beautiful. You know me, John and Danny sex scene. Beautiful that night.
Bran is watching. Always watching. Yeah, the fact that he didn't think to go and explore that a little bit further.
Yeah, that was the only dumb thing about that. I was just like, why wouldn't he like try to go on his own to be like, all right, I see my father's sister giving birth to a child. Let me see if I can reverse them. Go back in time a month or two or nine.
This may be a situation where the closer you look, the more plot holes there are. But at the same time, they had to get a lot of different pieces to a lot of different... Jesus, Sir Barristan. They had to get a lot of different pieces to a lot of different places in, what, 8... almost 9 hours of TV time. It can be forgiven. So the King's Landing meeting, was it what you expected it to be?
Yes, and I'm actually going to add more to it right now. I was thinking about this. How do I say it? When Cersei tells Jon that, you know, she can't, on one of the conditions, that Jon cannot, you know, hold arms against the Lannisters or what have you, take sides in the war after... you know, the Battle for the Dawn. I think that she knew, knowing that Jon was Eddard's son, the way how Eddard handled himself, she was well prepared that Jon was not going to give her the answer she wanted.
Wait, say this again.
But she knew, Jon wasn't going to give her the lie. You know, that Jon was going to be honest in the situation, and that honest answer is going to be, I already chose a side, and I'm not going to stand idle after this.
Okay. Well, I think part of Cersei's plan here, and I think she had this planned from back when Tyrion met with Jaime the first time. I think her plan was that she was going to make them think that she would help them, but while they were up north fighting, she would take that opportunity to get a stranglehold on at least the southern part of the realm, up to the neck. And how she got there, I mean, I'm sure there's a number of ways that she can get there. Here she made it believable that she's on their side because she did what Cersei normally would have done. And she spoke with Tyrion. She came out and she committed her troops to this cause. And I think that made this Northern and Dragonstone alliance believe her more so than if she agreed outright from the get-go. I think that condition, you're probably right. She probably knew that Jon had allied himself with Daenerys. And she was just going to take advantage of that in order to make her lie work. And her plan must be her forces won't make that much of a difference in the battle for the Dawn or the battle against this army of the undead. She did only see one of them. It's not like she saw all of the undead that Jon and Dany have seen. She only saw one. So maybe she doesn't think the situation is as bad as they're making it out to be. But she must figure that her forces allied with theirs won't make that much of a difference one way or another. But in the meantime, however it ends in this battle, she'll have Westeros, and she'll either have to face the army of the undead at that point, or she'll be facing Daenerys, and her forces will be depleted because of this battle. And I can't say that I blame her thinking. It's actually pretty good foresight on Cersei's part.
That's horrible foresight.
It is, but it isn't. It is if you've come to the decision that you can't make any difference in this battle for the Dawn. And that's what she believes.
Well, that's what she believes, but she also doesn't realize that she's going to die.
I think at that point, if they get past the neck and they get into the south, everybody's fucked anyway. Maybe she's just taking a gamble that Daenerys and Jon will beat them, or at least deplete their forces enough where maybe they can make a stand at the neck. And she's probably counting on Jaime staying by her side and being able to move the southern armies up to the neck and deal with whatever it is that comes south after this battle in the north. We talked about the north so many times, how it's like, it's not lands that are of any interest to a southern ruler. It's like two different planets, the north and the south. So I don't know. I don't know if I can blame Cersei. Is she foolish? Possibly. But she also may not be foolish. She doesn't have the gift of the full picture that Jon and Dany have. Really, nobody does. A lot of people are going into this based on what, well, not just Jon and Dany now, also Jorah and Tormund and the Hound and Gendry. Where was Gendry this week?
I think he's still supposed to be up at the wall, I think.
Well, if he died, we would have saw that, right?
Yeah, no, he didn't die.
So how about that Clegane Bowl, Jon? Both of us were fairly positive it wasn't going to happen. Because at the end of last season, the Hound was headed north. We didn't think he'd be coming back south. But as it turns out, this season was a lot of really fast travel throughout the continent of Westeros. So he did get north, he got further north, and then he got all the way south back to King's Landing before going north again. And he came face to face with his brother. A little anticlimactic, no?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're going to keep on teasing this, if they're actually going to do it. I'm just not sure.
Well, it seems like Sir Gregor can't be killed. He's like another version of a zombie. A Frankenstein monster in a way, but much like Lord Beric and much like the Wights, he's also been dead and returned from the grave. And there's a lot of characters now that have died and returned, or been to the brink and returned. And it's surprising that the major deaths this season were Littlefinger and Thoros of Myr. What other major death was there? And that's if you want to call Thoros of Myr a major death.
I don't even call that a major death. I think Littlefinger is really only major death. They're really a big time, really, death. I mean, the Tallys, they're really a C-level family of members right now. They weren't really, I mean, showrunners in particular, they'd be like, all right, this is Sam's dad and brother. They treat him like shit. So with the father, why should we worry and care about him?
Right.
Outside of that, Alina Tyrell.
Right. We assume Ilya Martell.
Ilaria Martell, you mean.
Right. Ilya Martell got annulled this season. Ilaria Martell got killed. We assume.
Yeah, I can't imagine them living. That actually puts another debunker into the supposed leak for next season. As somehow Tyrion is alive somehow.
Oh, right. That was one of the things, right? Bronn yeah. marries her.
Right. And did you get my text last night? So one of the other leaks was that.
Yeah. Barrys.
Turns out that Barrys is the prince that was promised. So that those leaks were fake. I mean, there's just no way.
They were fake, but some of the there stuff in there is.
Things that coincidentally.
Right.
Could coincidentally be somewhat correct, but it's not all right. It's definitely not all right. It's definitely a fan fiction material. There's no way that Varys is the prince that was promised. There's just no way.
I was kind of hoping that Varys and Littlefinger would meet one more time.
I was never much into those two. I always wanted them to die because I just wanted to get on to the real battle. And I always had a feeling that those two, in particular, Littlefinger would have no major piece play into the end game. Again, in particular, Littlefinger.
All right, well, speaking of Endgame, what are your thoughts on Euron at this point? Do you see him as a third act villain, or do you see him as dragon bait, or...
Third act villain.
Do you see him outliving Cersei?
Yes. I believe in the books right now, Cersei is dead in this timeline. I really firmly believe that.
Yeah.
At this point of the book, she's dead. Right now, I'll say it again, with the Golden Company coming over, right now in the books, if this is the books right now, Fagin is sitting in the Iron Throne.
Right.
Not Cersei. They're giving the Golden Company to Cersei / Euron, and they're going to make Euron more of the villain, and Cersei is going to have to eventually meet her fate. It's going to be Fagin versus Dany in the books is going to be the conflict.
Yeah, that makes the most sense. My thing with Euron is Cersei has a tendency to underestimate. That's the wrong word. Just a tendency to make everyone around her an enemy. And know what their weakness is. I don't think she's come across anyone like Euron Greyjoy before. And Euron Greyjoy tells her that he just wants to be married to her. And she accepts that at face value as all that he wants. When in reality, there's no way that that's all he wants. He wants Westeros for himself. And he'll use Cersei to get there. And she's not expecting it. especially now with Jaime being gone, her mind is not going to be on Euron as the enemy. She's going to be relying on Euron more and more, and he's going to take advantage of that. Cersei's a character. She's not an antagonist. She does things an antagonist would do, but ultimately, this actress gets second billing on every episode she's in. She's a main character on this show. She's one of the leads in Game of Thrones. She's not an antagonist. She's not a villain. She does villainous things, but she's not a villain. And whether Euron kills her or not, he will take advantage of her, throw her to the wolves, and take advantage of whatever situation he's offered. That's why he's doing all of this.
Oh, definitely.
And I don't think Theon's going to be able to beat him. I think he'll redeem himself, but I think Theon has it, as far as narrative justice goes, I think Theon's a dead man walking for the things he's done. So, the annulment and wedding of Rhaegar and Lyanna. When we spoke last, John, we were talking about trying to figure out why they got married in front of the Seven.
Well, I like your point. Your point was saying that Rhaegar wanted this marriage, this potential offspring, to be seen within the eyes of the Seven, the one that would actually... Because remember, even though the Targaryens didn't believe in anything, they still held the court of wanting the Septon to acknowledge that whoever the king was the actual king. By having someone in the High Septon there, he wanted to make sure that that person would be able to acknowledge that he is, yes, the king.
Aegon the Conqueror was anointed. I guess it was... shit. I got to read up on my history, but I guess it was... Was it Roderick Stark was the wolf that knelt?
Torrhen.
Torrhen Stark. I guess that was what completed his control of six of the Seven Kingdoms, not counting Dorne. And then he was anointed in the Seven Oils at Old Town before King's Landing was built and recognized across the realm as King Aegon, first of his name. So since the beginning, the faith of the Seven has played a very important part in the rule of Westeros. It is the majority religion of the realm. Them having their marriage annulled and then getting married in front of the Seven when neither one of them was likely a follower of the Seven, the only logical conclusion is they wanted their child to be the heir to the Iron Throne. But what happens with the other Aegon and with Rhaenys? I don't think that they're bastards now.
If this annulment was more known to more people in the realm than to people at King's Landing, obviously, would they then... Without, the Martells holding up arms or what have you. Let's just leave that discussion out of it. Would their labeling then be kind of like a Blackfyre?
I don't know. I don't think so, because they're not bastards to start with.
Right.
I would think it'd be more of a Dance of the Dragons situation where they can still say they have a claim, and though maybe technically they don't, if they have enough people supporting him, they would. What this does, if Rhaegar takes his second wife, and it's Lyanna, that's one thing. But the way they did it here, that literally starts a civil war. Even it did. Both ways did. In the books and the show, it starts Robert's Rebellion. But not directly. An annulment and a wedding directly may start a civil war by slighting the Martells of Dorne, who very possibly may be more powerful than the North. Of course, Winterfell and the Vale of Arryn and Storm's End, you put them together, they're more powerful than Dorne. But Dorne...
Right.
I feel as a kingdom is stronger than the North, stronger than the Vale of Arryn, and stronger than the Stormlands. I feel Dorne is more powerful. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they are. And maybe not. Maybe not. They could go blow for blow with most of them. And they'd have more men than Winterfell, that's for sure. If Ilya Martell is pushed aside by Rhaegar, and your niece and nephew, if you were Dorne Martell, your niece and nephew are, for all intents and purposes, turned into bastards, even though I don't think technically they are, wouldn't you consider that a slight against your house?
I would definitely think it would be a slight. Rhaegar was not even thinking about that, though. Rhaegar was just thinking about this great war. I mean, I know it's going to sound like defending and all, but, it's almost kind of like they say about this Rohai Pops, that you'll betray everyone that you love, but in the end, it'll all be worth it.
Yeah, I don't think the Martells would see that, though. But I think it's like you said, Rhaegar wasn't thinking about that. He was thinking about bigger picture things. But the problem is most of these High Lords don't think about bigger picture things outside of their realm, outside of the lands they rule. I don't think they consider bigger picture things. If it's hard for people to believe Jon Snow right now or Aegon Targaryen, it must have been even harder for them to believe Rhaegar Targaryen if he started telling them about a great war that was coming. I think the important thing to take from this is no matter how you slice it, the love between Rhaegar and Lyanna, not only was it doomed, but it also doomed the realm. As you said on the initial review about nobility that marry for love. It never works out. What else do you have to say about Rhaegar and Lyanna in this annulment wedding situation?
Three things. First of all, the dumber things I've seen since the show, since the episode, was the actor looked too much like Viserys.
Yeah, that's duh.
You know, it's like, oh, it looks like Viserys. Well, Rhaegar is the older one, so you could probably say Viserys looks like Rhaegar, maybe too much.
Yeah.
Viserys was, what, 5 years old around the time of Robert's Rebellion?
And
he was a young boy, and you know, he knows how Rhaegar was loved. I'm sure he wanted to emulate Rhaegar as much as he can, so he was going to wear the hair as much, you know, the same way.
Not to mention their parents were brother and sister, so, you know, they're going to look alike.
It's just so dumb. Well, they look alike. Well, no shit, Sherlock. Of course, but they're brothers. From a mother, father, who's also a brother, sister.
Last season when Bran had the vision of the Tower of Joy, and then HBO put out a graph, the Targaryen family tree, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if they did something similar this season, but they probably should have, because it seems like these same questions from last season are rearing their ugly head again. It's like people forget. Well,
the biggest question I'm still getting now is, oh, so Dany and John, they're cousins? Oh, no. Oh, they're brother and sister.
Oh, my God.
No. Aunt, nephew.
Is your brother's son your brother? Because if so, then yeah, they're brother and sister.
I think we, once and for all, the people who thought that there were twins at the Tower of Joy, that's completely squashed. RLJ is definitely 100% confirmed. There's no way they're making their own story out of this.
No.
Although I'm sure they're still going to be still seeing it. I know I'm still going to be seeing it, especially because they named him Aegon. I know that's coming. I know it's coming. Well, they named him Aegon because they're just going to give John's name to Aegon because that's who he is. That's Aegon in the books.
Okay, so then why wouldn't they include the real Aegon? There's so many plot holes to these idiots' arguments. R plus L equals J was confirmed last season. All this season did was the second half of that. If John is a bastard born out of wedlock, or if he is a legitimate heir to the Iron Throne, and it answered that question. He is a legitimate heir to the Iron Throne. Legitimate.
And real quick, for those people who think that the show is just giving him Aegon's name and maybe partially his storyline, because of the fact that they never mentioned Aegon Targaryen, the son of Elian Rhaegar, they have mentioned Aegon Targaryen. Season 3, The Brotherhood Without Banners mentions his name. Go back.
What do they mention?
They just mention his name. They mention his name. Some people think that they haven't mentioned his name. It's overlooked, but they do mention his name, Aegon.
The Aegon that was dashed against the wall?
Yes.
Oberyn Martell mentioned him a bunch of times, too.
Well, I think Oberyn just mentioned the children, but Season 3, The Brotherhood Without Banners mentioned the name. Season 1, you know, Caitlin mentioned the Targaryen babes. And to Season 3, they mentioned it. So a lot of people think that they didn't mention the name, and they're just the reason why, because they're just going to give that name to Jon. And the books, it's going to be different. Until the Neonic Boy over there finished the books, I have to imagine his real name is indeed Aegon. That's how it is going to be in the books. As unoriginal that is on Rhaegar's part, or why he would name his second son Aegon as well, even though his first son Aegon is still alive at the time, he must have thought that this prince that was promised baby, this baby of Song of, you know, of Ice and Fire, would have been named Aegon.
Going back to the House of the Undying, when Dany sees...
Elliot. Yeah, George in front of him is Elliot.
I thought it was Elliot, but I'm thinking they both had the same colored hair, though, no? Ilya and Lyanna.
Yeah, they did, but Rhaegar wasn't there at the time.
Right, and the baby was at the House of the Undying. It was in the vision, the baby. Where do you think Rhaegar realized that Aegon wasn't the prince that was promised?
There's got to be something in those scrolls. There's got to be something.
There's still a lot of questions to be answered here, but like detail stuff.
It's got to be from the book. It's not going to be anything the show's really going to do.
No, they're not addressing it. They're done addressing it. Now it's just going to be 6 episodes of battle, which is fine.
I also want to make mention of one also other thing. I don't think of all these episodes I've watched, I don't think I ever got teary-eyed watching Game of Thrones.
No, not even last season?
No, was not teary-eyed. I was teary-eyed, though, this past episode when Bran said he's never been a bastard. He's the heir to the Iron Throne. That got me. It still gets me. I put it all those on. End the show now. I didn't want to watch. That's it.
Well, speaking of endings, predictions for season 8. Listen, we read those script leaks. We both don't think that they're correct.
I'm not getting influence from that at all.
No, I don't think so either. But there have to be some parts of it that are true, because I guess they could have figured out that Tormund rides for Winterfell from Eastwatch.
Right.
As season 8 starts, where are we with these characters? We have Dany and Jon headed to Winterfell. Jaime heading to Winterfell on his own with his own host. Mm-hmm. So it does sound...
Well, he's not going there with anyone. He's going by himself, it seems.
What about Braun?
I'm sure Braun's going to catch up to him because he can't, because you know, he's in the gym. He can't die without him dying. If he dies, he's the only one who's going to be doing it.
Yeah.
The three major predictions I have for season 8 are going to be all the Dragons will be dead by the end. Danny and Agan will have a child. That's been foreshadowed the past couple episodes. And I'm going to go off. I don't want to say any deaths because I think it's too obvious now that there's so many people who are going to die probably. So I'm trying to think of something that will be a little different than a death.
Well, my prediction is Euron sits the Iron Throne.
Euron will betray Cersei somehow. In some fashion, Euron will betray Cersei.
Yeah, I think Euron gets on the Iron Throne somehow. Where are we at with Azor Ahai? Is it clear cut? It's only possibly Jon?
As I said for a long time, it's Jon. If it's not Jon, it's Jaime. At the same time, it just the way George made those comments about how the whole entire story comes down to pretty much Jon and Danny. It's got to be Jon. I'm 95% positive. I'm 97% positive it's Jon. If 3% positive, then if it's not Jon, it's Jaime. If he wants to go off on the, hey, there is sort of coming.
Maybe it is the prince that was promised and Azor Ahai are separate people. Maybe Jon is the prince that was promised, and Jaime is Azor Ahai, the last hero. Maybe Jon's the prince that was promised, Jaime's Azor Ahai, and Jorah's the last hero. Now, that'd be a fucking hell of a trifecta.
Khaleesi.
Khaleesi, I'm the last hero.
Come ride me up north. The weather's great in the summertime.
Oh, dude, I got a couple news items to share with you. First off, Padeswa, who directed... He directed the premiere Dragonstone. He also directed The Dragon and the Wolf. He commented on Tyrion's look at the end of...
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Basically, what he's saying is it's nothing. It's like nothing of note.
I have a thought that I have to write down in 2 seconds, but I just think that the safe bet is that I think he's just concerned about now how their relationship can affect what they're trying to do.
That's basically what he's saying. Is he's concerned about how love often gets in the way of what you need to do and good decision-making, and that's what he's worried about when he's looking at the door. He's like... Oh, Jesus, this may not be the best thing to do right now. And it wasn't anything vicious like he wants to side with the Lannisters. I mean, he's made his decision. He's siding with Daenerys for good or for ill. And seeing Jon and Daenerys having sex is just may not be the best thing for the upcoming campaign that they have.
Yeah, I hope that it's not going to be one of those things where Tyrion betraying Danny and siding with Cersei with her conversation.
No, it can't be. There's no way. Not enough episodes left for that kind of malarkey.
I was trying to say to someone at work, I said, it's just, if this was 2 seasons ago, I can definitely see them trying to do something like that, but if there's only 6 episodes left, there's just not enough time to do some sort of dramatic heel turn again, you know,
right.
Heel turn, a third heel turn from Tyrion.
Right. He made his decision. I mean, everybody's got to play with the hand they drew at this point. The other item of note, and I fucking forget, I think I saw it on Google. Somebody wrote a computer program and fed it the 5 books of A Song of Ice and Fire, and the computer program is now writing The Winds of Winter. Except the shit makes no sense at all. I meant to send it to you before, but I got fucking distracted. Where the hell did I see this article? I'm going to try and find it. What were you going to say?
Just real quick, I kind of mentioned it on Sunday, but I remember last year after The Winds of Winter that the, I think it was the director, whoever his name is, said that you're never going to know what Lyanna said to Ned about the name. But the actress, I think I said it in the interview, the actress said last sometime in an interview past few months that she just did mumble something. She didn't say any name. She didn't say Aegon or Jaehaerys or anything. She just, you know, did some, you know, mumble jumbles. I really just have one more thing to say about this episode.
Yeah, go right ahead, man.
You all know what my favorite scene was. My second favorite scene was a scene that I was looking forward to quite a while, was Jaime walking out on Cersei.
Yeah, you were real high up for this scene.
I loved it because I tell you what, Cersei saying that no one walks away, mate. You know what? He finally did. Yeah, she almost like she gave the nod to the mountain to kill him.
Yeah.
In a way, I think she was just trying to front to try to scare him. And I think she just really thought, there's no way he's walking out on me. He's not walking out on me. He's not going to do it. He's not going to walk out on me to help the Northerners. That's not my brother. My brother's gonna, you know, he's always gonna be by my side. What does Jamie do?
Walks out on her.
Because I'm telling you what, with this, the underlying thing this episode was promises, oaths, and vows. We see it with John when he had to keep the promise to Danny.
Right. And be honest about the promise he's keeping.
He wasn't going to lie. He was not going to lie.
Nope.
We see it with Jamie big time. He said, I pledged. We pledged. And I made this pledge. And I'm following through on this. I'm not going to go back on it.
Very Tower of Joyish. You know, like we swore an oath. It's like I made a pledge.
Once again, we go back to the Tower of Joy. Once again, we do see that promise and what it actually ultimately is. Maybe you can even say the Sansa having Littlefinger executed was, you know, a vow to the North that, you know, no matter what, you know, we're still family.
Right.
In a way, in a roundabout way.
Well, look, Littlefinger did save her from King's Landing. He did go out of her way. He helped her a few times. He got her in trouble with the Boltons, we know. I don't like looking at that storyline too closely, but he was her closest ally for a long time, and he did put her in a position to be successful.
And I like what she said, though. She said, yes, you did. You did all that stuff, and those some of those situations too, Kelly. But it was always for the benefit of Peter Baelish.
Yes.
And the end round of that outcome, you might have helped me, but you're only helping me because it helped you. And it put you in a bigger position of power. You know, help you to get the veil, help you, you know.
Look, he said it himself. His ultimate goal was to sit the Iron Throne with Sansa as his queen. And he could have got there. You know, if a couple things broke a different way, he could have gotten there. He did pretty well, bro, if you think about it. He did pretty well. He got very far. Chaos is a ladder. Chaos is a ladder. I found the article. Rest easy, George R. R. Martin. A computer program has written The Winds of Winter for you. Full-stack software engineer Zach Thout created a recurrent neural network to write The Winds of Winter based on words, phrases, and characters from the rest of the series. He called the motherboard its long short-term memory, meaning it remembers information stored in the text, like character deaths. It's not exactly accurate, though, as according to the new book, Ned and Lord Mormont have returned from the grave. In order to accomplish a feat that not even Martin himself has been able to achieve yet, Thout uploaded the first 5 books in the series into the network so it could spew out the latest twists, turns, and deaths in the iconic series. Here's a small sample from Chapter 1, narrated by Tyrion. The Hound found Jane Poole. Sir Meryn Trant had sent King Yoren through the harbor to summon the Black Brothers who had donned his horned veils. The fools he'd wed with them had all been reborn. He could not help himself at first rush. Ghosts came by in a camp when Asha hunted to the Night's Watch. Now the torches beneath them and the rose in his head, or we've brought them out to the world. He is stubborn and stupid, but his counsel never saved my brother at most. There must be 5 choices, he pointed out. Like the shit, it doesn't make any sense, any of it. But it said it got a couple things right. According to the neural network, Varys is going to poison Daenerys. Asha will start hunting the Night's Watch. Arya's latest weapon is her boot. But it does predict that Jon Snow will ride a dragon and Jaime will kill his twin sister Cersei. And it wrote a new character. Well, they think it's a new character. It's not. Greenbeard. Greenbeard was one of the Brotherhood without Banners in A Song of Ice and Fire. But it makes him like a point of view character. And he's like trying to kill Starks. Like it just takes, I guess, ideas of A Song of Ice and Fire. And it's pretty silly. But it's funny that like sure. it's almost.
This actually is going to happen. So what Hank George's thing he writes his books on. Like,
yeah.
That's why we got to go to New York for.
Yeah.
They stole it! They have everything!
We gotta give them whatever they ask for! We have to! Oh my god, I'm so worried!
The publisher's like this. Don't give them anything. This is their best chance for the book to come out.
Are they willing to put your name on the book once it's written by the computer? I think whatever they write, we're just gonna roll with it. But it doesn't make any sense! It doesn't matter. It'll be a book. People will buy it. People will think it's a work of art. Let's go with it. George, you're out. Computer, you're in. Give them whatever they want.
They do like they do the last book, and all of a sudden they give it to George. Oh my god, that's exactly what you publish it 2 books in 2 months.
We're all like, we knew it. We knew George Martin could do it. We had faith in him the whole time. Well, and he's like, he's starting to take credit for it. He's like, well, you know, I just hunkered down and I got to work. I knew that, you know, I wanted to get it done before the NFL season was over. And, oh, boy.
Any comments on Hot Five being a king? Well, that's the whole entire thing about making pies. People are hungry.
What else you got, John, with the dragon and the wolf?
Pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, a lot of stuff going on, but a lot of it was the conclusion to these half-season-long storylines. Where would you put Season 7 as a whole, after having done the rewatch of the rest of the seasons? I think I'll have to do a rewatch of Season 7 to know for sure, but...
Right, definitely. It's
not up there with Season 1 or Season 6. I don't know if it's as good as Season 4, maybe right around there. Maybe right around Season 4.
I would say so. Almost in a way, kind of like Season 5, where there was a lot of good things about this, but there was a lot of things that they did that are going to leave a little bit of a sour taste.
Yes.
Where you can't put it into the top two or three, maybe. Maybe it's three at best, but maybe it's the fourth best.
I think I might go 6 and 1 are interchangeable for me, so 6-1, 4-7-5, 2-3. Or 3-2. I don't fucking know. I forget which one we hated more, 2 or 3. I think that's the way I'll go. I think I'll put it above 5 for now. But, you know, we'll see at a later date. Which is a surprise, because most of the ratings for these episodes, we gave them fairly high marks.
I think our marks are very...
skewed. Skewed, to say the least. Actually, you know, I mean, Dragonstone, you did 7, I did 7.5. Stormborn, you were 9, I was 8.75. Queen's Justice, you were 9, I was 9.25. Spoils of War, you were 7.75, I was 6.25. Eastwatch, you were 8.75, I was 8.25. Beyond the Wall, you were 9, I was 8.5. And I think we're both 9.5 for The Dragon and the Wolf.
I mean, I'm just looking at another funny meme. The first part of the meme picture is Davos. Who ate all the fermented crabs? The next scene is John knocking on Danny's door saying, all right, John, it's now or never.
Oh, man. Oh, wait, he's got another good one. I can tell this is a good one.
Well, this one's a Photoshop from episode 6, where they're in the boat cabin where, you know, John... and Danny talking, and it's basically John and Danny, you know, sleeping together. And on the bottom, it's a picture of Jorah saying, can I go now, guys? Lit a camera.
Khaleesi, can I go now? Oh, Jesus.
Oh, the poor guy.
ThePromisePrinces.actionpackpodcast.com. Bend the knee and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/ThePromisePrinces. Follow us on Twitter, @PrincessPromise. We'll probably come back at you very, very soon with a season review, a full season review episode. We may take a break next week. Maybe I'll post the R+L=J episodes again from way back when. We'll let you know via Twitter or Facebook. But we'll be coming back with season and review episodes, and we will speak with you guys very soon. Thanks for sticking with us this season. We appreciate it. John, always a pleasure. And we'll speak with you guys later on. Bum, 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 bum